back, everybody. It's good to be back. Good to see you. And Beit Hashem, we pick up with another year in our continuing study of Sefer Bereishis. We left off, if one doesn't know the story of Bereishis, at a cliffhanger. As the waters had rose, and there was a tremendous flood, of course, as we know, and at the end of Perek Zayin, we were told about, of course, the terrible destruction. V'yigburu hamayim al aretz chamishim u'ma'as yom, and the water was continuously increasing for 150 days, and we're just left in the abyss, so to speak, of that great destruction. That's where we left off last week. Baruch Hashem, sometimes it's good to know how the end of the story goes. So you were able to make it through the summer months. You were not totally depressed with the story. And we know that good times are coming, slowly but surely. And that slowly but surely process begins now in Parakhes. And it's that process both of the receding of the waters, the healing of the physical world, and then obviously the enormous, enormous challenge on every level, psychological, social, etc., for Noah to then rebuild the world, is obviously going to be occupying us for the next quite a few shiurim. But that great, great drama, which we'll be studying through the end of the parsha, begins today. And it begins with Parakhes. And happens to be that the first six psukim, really, of this parsha are a unit, and that it's these six psukim that discuss the water receding, at least that initial process. And it's then in Pasuk Zion where we first hear of, particularly interest to Baltimoreans, the raven, the orev. So what I'd like to do is do the first six psukim as a unit tonight, and then Emirat Hashem pick up with Pasuk Zion and the orev next week. The truth is that if you're familiar with our typical pace, six psukim would be a lot if we went, you know, saw form of farshim on every phrase of every pasuk. But the truth is that a huge percentage of the commentaries on these psukim have a very, very in-depth and very significant and in an absolute sense, obviously an important discussion of trying to map out the chronology of what's described. There's a certain masorah about the date, even calendarically, when did the flood start? And then the question is, well, each of the different clues that the Torah gives us, this 150 days, 40 days, 150 days, another 40, when did that start? And are any of those dates overlapping? Huge discussions, Rashi, huge Rambans. I'm personally interested in it. I plead guilty if that's a bad thing. It does not grasp the great interest in, you're familiar with the shiur of the last few years, I'm always more interested in the human elements, the psychological elements, the Musar elements of the narrative, but I'm not trying to hide it from you. It's there, and for those who are interested and who are good at math, it's certainly a worthy endeavor, but it's not going to be something that we're going to focus on. So the truth is that most of the stuff we're going to do in the commentaries is really going to come from Pasuk Aleph, a little bit in Pasuk Beis, and then a little interesting thing at the end on Pasuk Vav. But let's see the sense of the six psukim, and as I said, for those who are interested in further research on the chronology and the timing and the dates, so even if you just start with Rashi and Ramban, you'll have plenty to do. So the parak begins as follows. Famous psukim. The Yizkor Elokim es Noach. Hashem remembered Noach. The Eis Kol Hachaya. All of the wild animals, the Habahema, domesticated animals, the Shirito, Bateva, who were with him, with Noach in the ark. The Aver Elokim Ruach Al Haaretz. And Hashem's something, or Hashem caused to pass a Ruach. It's almost impossible to translate that word because the translation itself is subject to a debate, which we'll see. Anyone want to take a gander? What does ruach typically mean? Wind. Biblical Hebrew ruach would typically mean wind. However, in your art scroll, how do they translate it? Right. So the reason they do spirit is because that's what Rashi does. But of course, it begs the question for you just to start your mind's wheels turning. Well, why would Rashi, by extension of the art scroll, why would they seemingly go away from what would be the typical pshat and choose a different explanation? So let's, L'chavad Rashi, let's call it the spirit. Hashem caused the spirit or his spirit to cover the earth, al ha'aretz, v'shoku hamayim, and the waters subsided. by Yisachru, Ma'ayanos, Tahom, and the fountains of the deep, Va'arubos HaShamayim, and the great windows of heaven, which again we saw in the description of the actual flood, we saw both of those referenced. It wasn't just rain coming from above, but apparently these great reservoirs of water underneath the ocean's floor opened, and so you had water rising and therefore over flooding its banks in all those areas of the world, simultaneously with the rain coming from the bottom, says the Pasuk. At this point, all of that closed. Vayikolei hageshem in hashamayim. And the rain was restrained, literally, meaning it stopped, it seemed to stop raining. As a result, now that the forces that are increasing the flood stop, Pasuk Gimel, Vayishuvu hamayim me'al ha'aretz, now, at that point, then the waters begin, thankfully and finally, to recede. Haloch v'shov, you know, steadily, slowly but steadily, v'yachasru hamayim mikzei chamishim u'ma'as yom. And the waters ultimately are diminished after, as a result of a 150-day process. At that point, or, again, this is part of the debate, which we're not going to be getting into, either at the end of that stage, or, according to other commentaries, somewhere in the middle of that stage, finally, the ark, the teva, comes to rest in what is determined to be the seventh month, b'shiv asar yom l'chodesh, on the 17th day of the month, al hare Ararat, on the famous Ararat mountains. And again, here also, there's a commentary to try to understand, you know, what mountains are these being referred to as. I saw some of the mafarshim give certain terms, which I tried to Google, and apparently I wasn't sure exactly where these things were, but apparently there were these very, you know, in the anthropology textbooks. And when I get academic sources in a Google search, I know that's not for me. But apparently people who are interested in these really, what they call, quite literally, antediluvian studies, apparently there are those who think that they know exactly where these mountains were. But I think, aren't there people somewhere, I don't know where exactly, who claim to this day think that they are the, they live in the place? I think I've seen that somewhere. There certainly have been people who have made, you know, models of the Teva. I just read something about that a week ago or something, coincidentally. I should say it's coincidence, it came up because of the Parsha, obviously. But anyway, I don't know exactly where this is, but somewhere, big mountains, and the Teva comes to a stop. It hits obviously, the bottom of the Teva. It hits the top of one of these mountains, and it causes it to stop. Hamayim hayu haloch v'chasor ad chodesh ha'asiri ba'asiri be'echad l'chodesh. And this process continues until the 10th month and the 11th day. Niru Rashi Aharim, at which point, finally, the heads of the mountain become visible. Now, again, without getting bogged down in the details of the timeline, but one thing you see already, which I would not have necessarily assumed from the beginning of the puzzle, from these juxtaposition of these two psukim, what do you see about when the ark stopped on the four, on Pasuk Dalet? What do you see about that from Pasuk
Hey? That the waters were still high enough that you couldn't see the mountain.
Exactly, exactly. When I read Pasuk Dalet, I thought that, you know, you imagine, in my mind's eye, I imagine, almost in a cartoon-type fashion, you know, you have the water, now we have a board. This is a news question, right? Or no, we have this a little bit, something like that, right? And the Gemara Shir will have to forgive me erasing this. So, you know, I kind of would have imagined, you know, you have the, you know, the waters, and then you got a little, you know, mound sticking above here, and, you know, in like a cartoonish sense, you have the ark, you know, resting on it. But you see from Pasuk Hey, that's not true. That's not what happened. Rather, voila, magic of the whiteboard. You had basically, let's see, the waters are here, and the Teva is down here. That's Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Hey is the first picture. Pasuk Hey is eventually that which you can imagine when they stopped, they didn't know how, I mean, they couldn't know what just happened. Why did they stop? They couldn't see where they were or what was occurring. I think that's just an interesting ha'ara. And finally, Pasuk Vav, Vayihi miketz arba'im yom, and at the end of 40 days, and here is machlokas, again, one of the other ones I keep on alluding to, which we're not talking about, Rashi and Ramban, these 40 days that are now quoted, that's 40 days after the 150, that's 190, or that's 40 days that are the last 40 of the 150. This is, as I say, all debate for those who are interested in it. But at the end of some period that's defined as a 40-day period, at that point, Yiftach Noach es Chalona Teva, Noach finally opens the window, or a window of the ark, Asher Asah, which he had made. And that sets the stage, of course, for the first try with the Orev, with the raven, which will start next week. So, leave aside all the things which I keep on alluding to that we're not going to talk about. Let's take a look back now at the Psukim, and let's try to what questions do you have? What things in the Pasuk? Let's start with Pasuk Aleph in particular, in a few different places we'll try to touch on some things which I think if you read carefully, maybe we can anticipate some of the questions, if not even some of the answers.
He can't remember.
Very good. Excellent. So the first thing which we will discuss, it's going to be our first topic, Marvin, is what does that mean to say that God remembered? Right? What does remembering imply?
Forgetting.
It's forgetting, right? Just ask anyone over 50. But not really, you know, seriously, by definition, at whatever age you are, right? So you don't remember something if you didn't forget it. You just know it, right? So in that case, l'chora, this is that type of verb is inapplicable to God. So what does that mean? So we will see, Mr. Shem, five different commentaries, each of which I think has some very interesting insights and messages and lessons, just into that one question. What does it mean to say God remembered? Excellent. Any other issues? Also, still in Pasuk Aleph.
This is Ruach.
Okay, so I already alluded to that. Very good. That's another question. What is the Ruach? If it means wind, okay. But are there any significances to that? Since I already told you that Rashi and Art Scroll say spirit, so what's the problem with wind? And what is gained by saying spirit? That would be another issue for us to discuss. Third issue, although we're already out of order, but that's okay. But a third issue, yeah.
So if Pasuk Aleph already tells us that the water subsided, why do we need Pasuk Beis telling us that the fountains were closed and the...
Right. That's a good question, but that's going to be one of those, that's part of the debate in the Mefarshim about the chronology. There's all these Psukim, are they consecutive as we read them? Which, if I'm not mistaken, again, I did look into it a little bit. I just looked into it to enough to know that I didn't want to go into it more. Which is sometimes a good thing to do also. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Rashi who instinctively generally thought that things were consecutive. Each period. So then, if there seem to be descriptions that overlap, that creates a problem. Others, from the beginning, felt that they're not necessarily consecutive. So, but that we're not going to get into. But it is certainly a good question. Yes?
If the Torah is like every letter or word is important, why does it stop about this point at the mountain, above the mountain, and why doesn't it say that it subsided? Why do you need this lengthy?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. I didn't, to be honest, see anyone who asked the question in such a direct way, and I wasn't planning on addressing that as a question per se. I'm thinking about it, you know, just in response to you asking it for the first time. You know, there was a decent amount of description that we saw, you know, in terms of the actual flood. And we have this to, you know, is there a musr in these kind of things? Probably not. But, you know, I guess I'm not sure this is a good answer, a sufficient answer, or there are not other answers. I don't know. But my first instinctive response is that, you know, this is such a overwhelming reality and, you know, quite literally for the history of all humankind in the world, so significant. You know, we almost don't want to leave out, you know, any details. The process was significant. My second, I guess I should say, as I'm thinking to you, a second answer that I would suggest will, I don't want to give it away, but I would say, saved by your cell phone. That serves you right. I'm just kidding. No problem. I wanted to do a study, you know, if the rabbi thing doesn't work out. You know, what can you learn about people based on their cell phone ring? There's got to be a dissertation in there. But anyway, and for the record, anyone who's keeping score at home, mine's on vibrate. Whatever that means, I don't know either, but I'm not suppressing any evidence. So without giving it away, but something which we're going to get to later in the shiur, but let me just say to you the following. Imagine this, for lack of a better... Imagine this almost as a play or as a movie. Mm-hmm. And imagining in our focus very being anthropocentric, in other words, from the focus of the humans, from Noah. So what would be elicited by almost a more dramatic, you know, then the waters went here, then the waters went here. What do you think that would elicit? What might that reveal, especially if you think about it from Noah's perspective?
The drama, the tension,
and I'm looking for one other word about the whole, imagine the whole thing. We spoke about it last summer, or whatever, at the end of the spring, summer.
The trauma of it.
Close, all good words. I don't disagree with any of it. I happen to be, also a good word. I'm looking for one other, just,
l'hashlama
se'inyin. The magnitude. Yeah. So how would you, again, let's imagine, put yourself. You are Noah. And you are Noah. And you are Noah. Right? How do you think you felt during this whole process?
Terrified.
That's the word I'm looking for. A fear. And we're going to see one of the Mefarshim point that out. So the commentary which we're going to see that talks about it did not say in response to your question. But with that in the back of, with that, so to speak, on the table, that may also be an answer to your question. Or is this... more vividly describes the process from Noah's perspective. Okay, it's a suggestion.
But it's similar to the detail by Akedas Yusuf.
Yeah, which I would suggest is for the same reason, right? And in general, in the narrative parts of the Chumash, you often have more detail than you would otherwise expect. I mean, Chazal famously pointed out by Eliezer getting a shidduch for Rivka, you have more detail there than you have almost any other story in the Chumash. You know, so again, although there Chazal do try to say there's a lesson in that, but when it's very often, you know, especially when you think of this as a human perspective, you know, it's like a good book, L'Havdil. The more detail, you know, the more riveting. Before we move on, how about the second word in the parak? And does that strike anyone as curious, worthy of analysis? What Elohim is usually Midas Adin. So in the context of this pasuk, does that seem as an appropriate choice or an inappropriate choice? Inappropriate choice, right? This is, I tried to give my semi-dramatic introduction about how from Perek Zayin to Perek Ches, we were going for Midas Adin, now the water's receding. This is Midas Arachamim. And yet instead of Hashem, we have Elohim. That's another thing that I would like to address.
Especially when you tell at the beginning of Perek Zayin, when he tells them to go in, he says,
Hashem.
Right.
Another thing I want to look into, I can't imagine, I'm just going to tell you, because this, I never would have anticipated if I didn't see the Mefarshim. So, I'm not selling you short to say I don't think anyone of you will anticipate it, which is the very strange word, Vayushoku. What does that mean, Vayushoku? And Miloshon what? What does that mean? And based on that, what might that tell us about the waters themselves? If the waters were by Yishoku, which is translated by Art Scroll as what? Just subsided, which I think is clearly what it means. But, you know, Yarad would have maybe mean the same thing too, right? Rested, right. So, right, rested. Okay, good. But the Torah chose by Yishoku. So as we'll see, Rashi says that relates to a very famous pasuk in Tanakh that we're all familiar with from the holiday of Purim. Right, from the holiday of Purim. And what does that tell us about the nature of the water? So I want to get to that in Emet Hashem as well. And one final thing, which we'll also get to. Oh, please, Rav
Hashem. Just where it said that Noah opened up the chalom that he made.
I was about to get to that. Thank you. The last thing I want to mention is the chalom. We'll want to talk about what is that chalom? Right, exactly. So some of the Mefarshim suggest exactly that relates to my question, which is what is the chalom? We'll get to that. And also, was this the first time he opened it? So we're going to discuss that as well. Yeah?
This may be partially addressed by Rashi, but one thing that I picked up on was he said, by Yisrael, it came to Noah, he's called Chayav, he's called Behema. And one inferred from that Noah, on his own merit, would not have deserved the Yisrael.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. But a little bit al derech what you're saying is, as we'll see from Medrash Rabbah and Chizkuni, it may be telling us what merit of Noach's was remembered. What I thought you were going to ask, which would also have been a question, Mefarshim, which is what is not listed though? And what else is not listed? That Rashi discusses and others. And also, what was animal? What else is it mentioned? The birds!
And the sheriffs are usually.
Right, yeah, well, no one really cares about that, yeah. Whatever.
But it really goes
Yeah, I saw the commentaries certainly mentioned the birds as well. So, with that introduction, hopefully we've whet your appetite. So let's get to the first question. I think it was the one that Marvin asked. Marvin, you were mechaven to the Mefarshim, or even Chazal, the Medrash, implicitly, but it's a question that's explicitly asked, most clearly by both Radak and Ibn Ezra, two of our greatest Parshanim. Let's take a look at the first source on your sheet. The Radak says, Vayizkor, Ein Shikacha, Ve'ein Zikaron Lefan of Yisbarach. What are you talking about? There's no forgetfulness, there's no remembrance when it comes to Hashem. You remember after you forget. Before we see his answer, let's just take a look at the same question, just in the Lashon HaZahav, the beautiful language of the Ibn Ezra. Chalila, Lios Shikacha, the Katon Sheba Malachi Asharis. It would be sacrilege to ascribe forgetfulness even to the most insignificant of divine creatures or angels. Afkil Yotzer Hakol, all the more so to the Melech Malchei Hamlochim Shein Shikacha Negdo. Obviously, there can't be any forgetfulness when it comes to God. So that's you know, forever and for otherwise known as Marvin's question, right? Just you know, copied by Ibn Ezra and Radak. So let's see a few answers. So Radak gives what I would say really back against the wall is the most simple, obvious answer. Says Radak, Dibra HaTorah B'Lashon B'nei Adam. It's figurative. Now, I would add, this is my own little homiletic drush. So you'll say, but why? Okay. Or, not just that. So we don't mean it in some theological sense. It's impossible. Fine, granted. But if we are speaking in a human sprach, in a human parlance, so if I were to tell you that there was this people surviving the greatest catastrophe, hanging on in this boat, and let's say it would be me who's in charge. It's been a dream of mine. You'll indulge me now for at least a minute. And then a description of my behavior said, and Gottlieb remembered Noach. What do you think that would be anticipating? I would say, bevorning. What is that coming to preclude? Or what is that coming to respond to? What I think it may be, again, I may be reaching too far here, and I don't mean this necessarily as pshat, but is that as if I was the outsider looking in, it looks like God forgot about Noah. As if there was a third party, not God, not the people in the ark, but somebody else. You know, would you forget about Noah? The whole world, you know, don't forget about me, you know, and maybe, this is homiletic upon homiletic, maybe that's how Noah felt. Oh, we're here! Anybody home? You know, and again, getting back to the point we just saw, terrified. You know, we saw it a little bit last time, Joel. Even you agreed with me eventually. And we're going to see it again in some of the Mefarshim today. The waters were not calm. It was rocking. It was dangerous. You know, it wasn't like, okay, we're in, now we're okay. You know, there was no reason to assume that they never had any fear. On the contrary, a number of Mefarshim saying, we're going to see it again tonight, explicitly, that there was fear. So, you know, comes along the pasuk, you know, again, to kavyochol, to the extent that we can say such a thing, God says to Noach, I remember you. I didn't forget about you, but it wasn't time yet.
Well, maybe he was testing him, and he didn't know if he wanted
to. Also true. Good. Also true. That's right. So, that's just my shtup into the Radak. But now, what does the Radak himself say? So, that's how he answers the question, but then what is... Then the Radak adds a second point. Ura'ah, kidai, and this is really piggybacking on what we just already said, but he says he makes it in a more specific fashion. Kidai haya lahem savul hatsa'ar hagadol b'teva. God finally came to the decision, enough is enough. I'll speak for shine sight. Right? You know, if we could only have him say that about the ghosts. You know, it's enough. It was enough. Hashem saw that. That's what's being expressed. So in this little word, Vayizkor, is a very almost profound, dramatic, emotional declaration, or at least a way, you know, new stage, according to Radak. That's approach number one. Approach number two is Eben Ezra. We already saw he asked the question. Comes along Eben Ezra and says, and he gives other examples, as does Radak. This is the first, but it's certainly not the last time the Torah uses the word Vayizkor about God. So Eben Ezra says he has a theory. When is the term Vayizkor used? Because obviously, again, it can't be meant literally, as he himself had just said. When is Yizkor meant? It refers to Rak Asher Tiret Tovas Hashem Ba'aretz Yidaber HaKasuv. Whenever the Torah says about Hashem remembering, it's an allusion to Chazdei Hashem, to an act which is being introduced of God's kindness. Ki Zachar Asher Heitiv Lo Ba'Lifnei Hashem. Some good that's about to happen from Hashem, that's what's introduced with Vayizkor. And clearly this is a perfect example of that. So even though it's not the same explanation as Radak, but he has the same question as Radak, and again, he sees this as, you know, giving a subtle nuance to the story with that choice of word. If you take
for another topic, but by Sarah, especially, Pakad is Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's
why Pakad?
First Pakad and Zinkaram is the difference.
Right, yeah. Alan, you're an accountant. At our current pace, when will we get up to that pasuk?
Tax
season. Tax season of 11, 12, which tax season? Okay. Let's take a look at Rashi. Before we see the Tanchuma, Rashi is really building on. Let's see Rashi. Vayizkor Elokim. The second Rashi, excuse me, we're going to get to the first Rashi next. But let's see the first Rashi. Excuse me. The second Rashi, Vayizkor Elokim es Noach v'Gomer. Ma zocher lehem lebehemos. Asks Rashi, it's not just that Hashem says he remembered Noach, he remembered the animals. Ma zocher lehem lebehemos. What did he remember about the animals? Says Rashi, zchus, a merit. Shelo hishchisu darkam, that they did not literally corrupt their ways, which means they weren't engaged in immorality, sexual immorality, kodem l'kein, before this, which then we saw when we discussed, you know, way in the beginning of the perek, what was so bad about the world that Hashem needed to destroy it. So what we saw, chamas, that was one thing, and the other thing was that not only the humans, but we saw from the Pesukim and Chazal that even the animals were engaged in perversions. So these animals, Rashi says, these animals, Mr. and Mrs. Elephant who were on the ark, Mr. and Mrs. Sheep on the ark, those particular ones, if you could have tagged them, lo hishchis darkam, they didn't do that beforehand, and during the whole time in the ark, says Rashi, lo shimshu bateva, even though it wouldn't have been immoral per se, or at least unnatural per se, but it would have been inappropriate, given what's going on in the world. Private individuals shouldn't be engaged in their own pleasure, and therefore they abstained. So, leave aside the details of the animals, which we'll get to in a moment. What do you see from Rashi? And if you can't anticipate it, we'll see if it becomes clear when we see the Midrash, which is Rashi's source. What is he defining, or what is he, just like where the Eben Ezra had said, Zachor is a reference to Hashem's kindness, what does he see, Zachor? What's the whole context of Rashi's analysis? Both his question and his answer is predicated on reading what into the text? An allusion to what?
Like a judgment almost.
Close, very close.
Well, that's what Vayizkor Elokim.
Right, but just...
The previous Rashi.
Before that?
It's comparing the past and the present.
No.
In the past,
that's true about that. That's it. You're right. But I don't know if it's a comparison, but you're right that he does mention past and present in his conclusion, his Kamash Malon. But what's the framework that he begins with when he sees the word Vayizkor that makes him ask the question that he did? So he says, "What do you mean, remember the animals?" So if you let's play devil's advocate, I'll say it back to you, Rashi. What do you mean? Remember the animals? Based on what we said before, it looks like God has forgot them. Well, it looks like God, it's not just the animal, it's not just Noach and his family that are just flopping around in the water. You have thousands and thousands. I mean, the last hope for the entire animal species. Where's God? Did he forget that? But Yisrael came here and remembered them too. He wants to keep the animals going. But that's such a problematic. But Rashi's bothered. Oh, I understand. By Noah, by Yisrael, no problem. But by Yisrael, by animals. So what? Again, it'll be obvious once you realize it. Let's see if anyone can anticipate it. What was it? Very good. Very good. In other words, Rashi sees the word Vayizkor as an allusion to a zuchus. It must mean, this is probably what you meant when you said judging, but I wanted a more precise answer. What Rashi sees is a reference to a zuchus. So when it comes to a human being, Vayizkor, telling him Noach, understood, he saw his Noach zuchus. Well, which zuchus that is, we didn't see yet, even from, it's interesting, Rashi assumed it's obvious what zuchus that was. He doesn't actually tell us. But okay, about a human being, that's obvious. But what kind of zuchus by an animal? So says Rashi, you know, usually you would think that's funny, but actually in this story of all times, we've already said a few prakim ago that they were punished animals for a culpability, and so to here we see that they taka have a zuchus. But the whole question and answer predicated on his assumption that Yisrael refers to a zuchus. Eben Ezra, Radak, they're not talking about zuchusim, because that's not introduced into the pasuk, unless you assume that the Yizkor is, so to speak, a code or an allusion to it, which is clearly the predicated assumption of Rashi. Let's see the Medrash Tanchuma, just some of the basic key lines of the Medrash, which is really the basis of Rashi, and it makes it a little bit clearer. Im l'Noach Nizkor, if Noach is remembered, Lama l'chaya l'behema, what is the animals, what's it got to do with them? El Yizbarach Shemo Shal Kadosh Baruch Hu She'eno Hashem does not withhold or forget the reward from any creature. Afilu akvar haye mishamra mishpachto. Says even what is akvar, a mouse, right? Even a mouse. This mouse, he kept his family, meaning to say he wasn't involved in these deviant or immoral practices. Velonis arev b'minacher. It wasn't saying, ooh, look at that rabbit. She looks cute. You know, may have said it, but didn't do anything about it. And therefore, why is it all mentioned? Kidei litol schar, as a way of giving reward to them. So again, what do you see again? Now that the Torah has helped us, we already fleshed it out. It's clear in this medrash. Again, the whole assumption that he's making, without stating it, but it's obvious, is that we're talking about a schar here, and therefore they have this big theological truth that's being demonstrated that God will reward anything, even the smallest little mouse, if they do the right thing. You know, again, according to any other mafarshim, what are you talking about? It's nice, but go talk in the corner. What you got to do with the pasuk? No, says Medrash, and says Rashi following the Medrash. That's exactly what is going on here. And then the Medrash goes on to describe the immorality of the people and of the animals, etc., etc., and that's why Hashem wanted to destroy everyone. And then finally, towards the end, where I have it underlined again, he tells us something very specific, which I can't remember, but I think we quoted Mefarshim who said this, last year, but the Tanchuma here says explicitly that when Noach was going around the world, he went to Africa to get the chimpanzees and to the parrots and to this, and then he went to Australia to get the kangaroos and whatever, wherever Noach was going to get all the animals, Kara Kadosh Baruch Hu l'Noach v'yomer lo bachar lo chabahema v'chayev ve'of me'osin shelo erivu es mishpachtehen. As I said before, the animals themselves, Mr. and Mrs. Parrot, Joe and Jane, and all them that went on the ark, they were dafk animals that had never engaged in these immoralities. Shenamar, as the Pasuk had said, go get me kol behema tahora from any tar animal, tahora, so he understands more in an allusion, kishem shenivres. They're as pure as the day they were born, as we would say idiomatically in English. They were still as pure as a baby, so to speak. They came, shiotzim, and a teva, and now that they're going to leave the ark, they stayed as pure even throughout it. Shneamar, as the puzzle is going to tell us, we'll get to it hopefully in a few weeks. They left the ark also in that same pure state. They were mentioned with Noach, shneamar, v'yizkra elokim, as Noach. That's, along with Rashi, answer number two. Namely, without getting the specifics, we don't know yet what Noah's zuchus was. He didn't tell us either. Although, minimally, we know that he at least wasn't engaged in the immorality, the rest of the world was engaged. But suffice to say, the Medrash didn't tell us that, but we know it anyway. But Lamaisa, in terms of what does Vayizkor mean, it's an allusion to a zuchus, and these Mefarshim kind of backdoor into that parish based on their question of, well, what do you tell me about the animals for? That's answer number three. Answer number four is from the Ramban. Says the Ramban, Hiskira ben Noach, Meshay Tzadik Tamim, Karaslo Brisla Hatzilo. Also, it seems to be assuming the same framework of Rashi in the Medrash. But now, unlike they who never talk about Noach, he dafka focuses on Noach. And he says, you know what Zuchus Noach had? Not a specific one, but a general one. Noach was the man. Noach was the one. Even before the one became the president. He was the one. He was the one. He was the tzaddik. He was a tzaddik. He was Tamim B'Dorosov. He was a big tzaddik. And Hashem made a deal with him. Hashem told him, I'm going to save you. Hashem keeps his word. So someone asked before, what about Noach's kids? So he says here, Beferish, they were okay, but the reason they were saved is because of Noach. And therefore, since the focus is on Zechus, only Noach is mentioned because it was in his Zechus that they were saved. It's interesting. He assumes, not like the Medrash before, not at all, not rejecting the previous Medrash, that that's not what's going on with the animals. Because he says, theologically, the idea of reward and punishment is limited to human beings. He rejects the whole tradition that we just saw from the Medrash. So what taka does it mean by them? His kira azachira behem? Ki zochar es dvar kodsho sh'amar v'hoya ha'olam. He remembered his own desire, his own word, that the world should have a penguin, and the world should have a zebra, and the world should have an elephant, and the world should have a mouse, and a rat, and a little bug. All those things in his infinite wisdom, infinite and inscrutable wisdom, Hashem wanted. He remembered his own desires, kaviyachol. He wanted it to be, he's starting over, on the one hand Hashem felt a need to do over, but he wanted to do over with the same things in place. He wasn't going to change it, he was just going to start it again and try a second time. And therefore he remembered them that they shouldn't perish, they shouldn't be stranded in the table, but rather they should be saved, and they should be able to continue to perpetuate the species. Our other question, what happened to the birds? What happened to the creepy crawling things? So he basically just, I would say, almost punts on that. He says, well, yeah, that's included in animals. He doesn't get hung up on that. He mentions it.
Well, chai doesn't mean, chai means like living, includes other things.
Right. The question is still better than the answer, because obviously when we talk at the beginning of the story, we do mention them very specifically. Okay, but...
Could that be maybe why the raven and the dove had to go out, because they needed a merit that they didn't...
I don't know. That's really, really intriguing. It's intriguing. Let's keep it in mind for the next few shurim. I don't know. I never heard that before. Let's keep it in mind. I don't know. So, fourth answer, says the Ramban, is, on the one hand, like Rashi, that he's talking about Zechusim, and he focuses on Noach's general Zechus, and then he has his Chiddush about the animals, but doesn't mean Zechusim means that Hashem wanted the species to continue as such. And finally, we have the Chizkuni, which is also going to be alluded to by the Medrash Rabbah at the end of the next source, but it's the Chizkuni who says it here as a response to the question. Again, he doesn't give you all the introduction. If you hadn't seen Rashi in the Medrash Tanchuma, and you hadn't come to our shir to put it all together, you wouldn't appreciate the Chizkuni. But now that we've seen from these commentaries in the Medrash, and Rashi and I would argue Ramban as well, working off of the Medrash, that the framework is Zechus, Zikaron equals Zechus. So now we have Chizkuni giving a much more specific and narrow Zechus. Shazon Ufarnes has called Hashem Aser Chodesh B'teva. That whole time they were in the Ark, he supported them. So I just want to make the following observations. So first of all, in terms of our range of Shitas, we've gone from, so to speak, the most general to the most specific. We're talking about a specific Zechus of Noach right now, as opposed to, say, Ramban, who said just general Noach is a good guy. I have a question, and I'm almost scared to ask it, because I think that the simple answer is just too shocking. So I'm afraid to ask it, but we're among friends. Is not the implication of the Chizkuni that had Noach not been the super tzaddik that he was in the Ark, his story might not have ended differently? Isn't that the implication of the Chizkuni? I'm scared to say it, because it seems impossible. The Ramban, I understand, even if it wasn't exactly a dramatic cliffhanger, because Hashem already promised Noach, but we're reaffirming, says the Ramban, that Noach didn't just get to go in the ark at the beginning, but he's also going to get out of the ark, because he's a good, jolly good guy. But the Chizkuni is very specific. Not about all the sitkas that Noach had, Sadek Hayatomim B'derosav, building the ark faithfully, living a good moral life. That may have gotten him in the ark. Says the Chizkuni, you know why Hashem didn't forget about him? You know why Hashem remembered him? Why he's going to save him after letting him get out of the ark? Because he was a good guy in the ark. He took care of the animals. You know, if the Ramban, if he agrees with the Ramban, it's really, not only is it almost confusing, it's underwhelming. Like, in the scheme of Noah's whole life, this was, you know, one of the things that would be on his resume. But I wouldn't leave the resume with this. You'd leave the resume with Tzadik Tamim Bedorozov.
He really had no choice to do this. It was almost like he had to feed the
animals. He could have boycotted in the ark. He could have boycotted in the ark.
He wanted them to continue to survive.
Well, okay, no, but he could have said, God, that's on you.
He didn't feed them, they
would have eaten. Okay, that's... Okay, I'm willing to give the... You know, the Chizkuni does. I'm willing to give Noach the credit for that. But I'm saying, why fixate on that?
Because this was fulfilling the mission. I mean, he had a mission to complete, and that was...
Good, listen, I want... A so good...
Has he ever told his mission? That his mission...
Is to keep the animals alive.
The animals alive and to repopulate the world.
I mean, we'll see what happens when he leaves the ark. But I don't, so we didn't see that beforehand.
And didn't you say that at your drush last Friday night something that the whole world was based on the chesed that Noah, this became the purpose of the world afterwards to continue was the chesed that Abraham.
Did you daven somewhere else on Friday night?
You didn't say, maybe somebody else said.
I don't remember. Could be. It's a different Shomrei Emuna. Alan, we need to talk. I'm just kidding. So are you saying, once again, so I understand you correctly, I mean, are you saying, and I actually, frankly, I hope you are, because I'd love to have something to hang on to, are you saying that that's all it means, but it does not mean the implication that I'm suggesting? Or you are...
The implication that you're suggesting that he...
That had he not been as great a tzaddik in the ark, maybe he wouldn't have gotten out of the ark.
I think that at some point God thought that his mission was complete and it was time to wrap things up.
Okay, so maybe, again, I don't know if this is exactly what you had in mind, but I'll build on what you're saying then. Maybe all the Chizkuni means is that we're only alluding to that point because that's the relevant part of the story now. But that it doesn't mean that he wasn't the big tzaddik in general, that's obvious. And it doesn't mean that this is the only reason he's going to survive. It just means that this is why it's ending now.
Well, this is a transitional and significant transitional period between the old world and the new world. So perhaps read into the word bedoro asav, meaning it doesn't say bedoro, it means in all of the consecutive generations throughout which he lived, he was a tzaddik,
right,
included this...
Right. I get it. It can't be so. On the other hand, I'm very torn because it seems to me...
Well, if he says, I'm taking the best guy and the best animals and putting them in this test capsule, and if they continue to be the best that they can be,
then I'm willing
time,
to...
Then let them out.
Right. So, you may be right, Susan, but that's building on what I said, which is scary, and I never heard anyone ever say that before. Just so you should know, if you take a look at the end of the next source... The Lashon of the Bereishis Rabbah, the Medrash, which Chizkuni does not quote at all, and this Medrash is not addressing explicitly this question, I don't think, or maybe he's alluding to it, but Lamaisi, at the end of a long Medrash, which is really talking, I think, about something perhaps a little different, but here the Medrash says, when it talks about remembering Noach, Ma Zachira Nizkarlo, what did he remember? Shazan Apirnes Osam Kuyabet Chashbateva. Same idea. So it's not just Chizkuni, it's the Medrash as well that focuses on that very specific chus. Excuse me. Anyway, okay. So these are the general shittas that we have for what it means to say God remembers. The second question that we had, which I think is a very interesting one also, and it's a very important moral lesson, is if we're talking about this great benevolence and this turning of the corner to Rachamim now, so why of all things use God's name of Elohim, which traditionally denotes God's strict judgment, the Midas Hadin. So if you take a look at Rashi, the first Rashi now, Rashi is clearly very bothered by that. But Rashi gives us a very interesting answer. Zeh Hashem, Midas Hadinu. This name of God alludes to God when he's wearing his strict judgment hat. V'nehefcho l'midas harachamim. So why use it here? To show that even the Midas Hadin was transformed to mercy. Ayidei Tzilas HaTzadikim, through the prayers, I guess, of Noach. Furthermore, the opposite could have been true. Now we're digressing to make the larger point. You can reverse it as well, as we saw in our story, previous scene, when God decides that he has to bring the flood, etc. We use Hashem's Midas HaRachamim when speaking about how Hashem decided to destroy the world. Well, that ain't Rachamim. And the answer was, even God's, even the nicest teacher at some point realizes that I have to be strict. Even God's Rachamim had reached its limit. So I would say, just first of all, so this is really based on Medrash. So before we elaborate on this, let's see the Medrash. Bottom of your sheet. Quoting the Pasuk from Tehillim, Tov Hashem l'chol, Hashem is good to all, v'rachamav al kol ma'asav, and His mercy is on all of His creations and creatures. Connects that Pasuk, the Medrash, to our Pasuk, v'yizkor alukim. Amar Rishu Bar Achmeini, Oy lehem l'rishoyim, Shem hofachim midas harachmim midas adin. They turn God's rachmim into judgment, to strict judgment. V'chamokam sh'nemar Hashem midas harachmim, because after all, we know that Hashem always means midas harachmim. Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanun, the greatest example being after, right, and the meraglim, Hashem says, Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanun, and that can be used, as we just saw, even for Midas Adin, before the flood actually came. However, Ashreyem HaTzadikim, praise of the Tzadikim, Shein Hofuk Midas Adin, the Midas HaRachman, they can turn Din into Rachman. And we said, usually when we have Elohim, it is referring to Midas Adin. For example, in a case where it is transformed, Yishma Elohim has Nakasav, Yisro Elohim has Priso, right? Hashem hears the cries of the Jews in Egypt, and now he says, ready to save them. You see, that's their cries turn the din into rachamim. Or, furthermore, our case, Yisro Elohim has Noach. And then he adds, as a P.S., the Medrash, well, what reminded Hashem to turn into rachamim? Hashem taking Noach taking care of the animals. So, number one, I would say that you see from this, I think, a general important truth, larger than the issue of God's names. What's the larger issue? And that is that it's never static. It's never static. Even when you're right in the eye of a Midas Adin, it can be turned to Rachamim. No matter how good the Rachamim is, you can blow it, and you can turn it in. You can turn it to Din. I mean, that's clearly the larger message of this Chazal and of this Rashi. That's number one. Number two is, I would add, and I don't know that it's fair to read this into anybody, but I would say that another truth, which may be indicated as well, is that, you know, as we all know, as parents, right, sometimes, right, the greatest rachmanis you can do for your kids is to put forth the Midas Adin face. Right? Sometimes you got to be strict, sometimes you got to punish them, not because you want to punish them, but because al tzrachim, they need it. Right? And so too, in the other direction, sometimes the rachamim can really be the worst thing for the kid, can be a Midas Adin. Again, the point being that none of these things are static or absolute, I should say. Both, they all have to be, none of them are static, and they're also not absolute. They have to be understood contextually, what's the right thing. And a final message, which is really building off of the Rashi, just said more succinctly, or more specifically in focus, is Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch, building off of this Rashi, he doesn't quote it, but he alludes to the Medrash. He says, according to the sages, this rescue and restoration was judged by God to be justly deserved, apart from the associated consideration of the new future of mankind. Hence, this name of God was used. In other words, says Rav Hirsch, looking at the story, you say, why is Hashem going to save Noah? So you could have said, for God's sake. Not Rachamim. He wants the world to exist. They don't deserve it. But Rachamim, he has to have Rachmanis on them for his sake, or just because he wants to be. Says Rav Hirsch, no, that's why B'davka, while Hashem is showing Rachmanis, he uses the Lashon of Midas Adin to show this was deserved Rachamim. Right? Sometimes you just, your heart breaks for the kid, so you just say, okay, don't worry about it, I'm not going to punish you. And sometimes, whether it's the apology or whatever the makeup is, or the child, you know, really shows you they deserve to be forgiven because they've corrected or whatever the situation is. Says reverse, that's what's being alluded here. Okay, let's do the ruach thing now, and then we'll end. Then we got three more little things. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think he's not saying what Rashi's saying. He's saying this is midas hadin.
Right.
This is not a midas harachamim that is.
I think he's reading it into the Medrash. In other words, he quotes Chazal according to the sages.
No.
He quotes Chazal, and Rashi was quoting Chazal. But I hear what you're saying, though.
Minatin is deserved. It's not a rachamim because he earned it. Therefore,
but I think that I don't disagree with you. I just my sense, not to be medayik too much into those first four words, is that that's how he understood the Medrash.
See, the problem I have with Rashi and with the Medrash is now you're playing games here.
Right, I hear.
Okay, so now we're going to be inconsistent, but. Yeah, it can work like this right now.
And at first you're saying helps that.
Yeah, because
at first is better.
Otherwise, you know, did Rashi quote every pasuk here where the midas where Hashem's name is really to be learned in the reverse? It's like now it's the homiletics
of Rashi, right?
Got out of it was a good point. It's not static. But in terms of
right. I hear what you're saying. Unless what Rashi means, and this could be how Rav Hirsch is reading it, unless what Rashi means is that the reason that they deserved it was because they davened, as Rashi says, or because of the. Anyway, okay, we could go around on this. We only have 5 minutes left, and I want to just quickly touch on a few more things. Number one is we saw that Ruach. Right, the article translator is spirit. Why is the article translator spirit? Because of Rashi. You take a look at Rashi, the next Rashi, the third Rashi. But Yavar Elokim Ruach, Hashem caused a Ruach. What does that mean? It says Rashi, Ruach Tanchumen, a spirit of consolation, panacha, and relief, over Lafanov. In other words, relating to Rachamim. A certain Rachamim, a certain Tanchumen, so to speak, appear. Now, the object is very figurative. And it's not usually the way the word ruach is meant. So if you take a look on the sheet, the Sifrei Chachamim was a commentary on Rashi, who usually explains why did Rashi say what he say. So he gives two explanations for why Rashi would have chosen here ruach in a more figurative sense than in a more literal sense of the wind. It says number one, Kasha l'Rashi yihai ruach mamash, this was wind. Haksiv achar kaf yishoku hamayim, that the water started dissipating. Ze'eno. Because as other mafarshim say, the wind. What happens in the ocean when it starts getting very windy?
You have more waves.
The water gets more choppy. It doesn't start getting calmer and dissipating. And yet this is the introduction to the water going down. So he says it could have been literally wind. Second of all, something that he gets really technical on. He says, what does it say about this spirit that it was on the face of the earth? He says, what do you mean? There was I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds of feet of water on the face of the earth. If it meant wind, the wind would have been going on the face of the water. Now again, you could have said that Aretz here means the surface in this case being water, but okay, that's just one of our three last points, that's the issue of Ruach. Number two, the issue of Vayishoku. So take a look at Rashi again, the fifth Rashi. Kemo Kishoch Hamas HaMelech. Right, when it said, right, about Achashverosh, right? What did it say about his? That the finally he's calmed down. The anger of the king had, what do we say? Cooled down. That's the lashon that Rashi alludes to. And Rav Hirsch builds on that. He says the root of this expression indicates that the action of the waters of the flood was not merely mechanically destructive. Strong waters will rip apart things. The force of water, as we know, can be very strong. But also chemically dissolving. It was hot, boiling, seething waters. It wasn't just natural flood waters. These are boiling, which we saw. We saw this concept when we discussed last year, the flood itself. And Mepharshim said that's the contribution of the Mayanos to home. Those deep underground springs that boiled forth. And therefore we said that just being in the water could kill you because of their heat and their chemical composition. And finally, the issue we saw in Pasuk Vav of the Chalon. Says Rashi, what's the Chalon? Or Pasuk Hay, I should say, right? It's a Pasuk Hay? Six. Well, Sifrei Chachamim assumes that it was. He says that's why Rashi was bothered. How could you say it's wind? Wind wouldn't have made the water go down. Wind would have made the water get more choppy. That's the Sisra Chachamim is reading cause and effect into Rashi. Okay. Miketz Arba'im Yom, what happened then? Noach opened up the ark and he's about to send out the raven. Says Rashi, Pasuk Vav, everyone have it, Pasuk Vav, Litzohar. This was the Tzohar Tasa Lateva, which we saw last year when he was building the ark. And if you remember then, Rashi had quoted two Perushim, what is a Tzohar? One was a window, another was a special stone. But as we noted then, we quoted this Rashi back then, this Rashi clearly holds that it was a window. What they teach all the kids in elementary school, that it was a magical stone, is not true according to Rashi. There are opinions that way. Rashi alludes to his opinions a parak ago. But ultimately, if you wonder, what did Rashi think that Tzohar was? Rashi equates the word Tzohar and Chalon. Tzohar here is the Chalon, is the window. There was a window. And that's how he assumes the Chalon. That's just Ha'ar number one. Ha'ar number two comes from the Radak, and with this we close. The Radak wants to know why, if the Torah only tells us this one time that he opened up the window, he assumes that it was the only time. But he asks the question, this is, again, this gets to the chronology issues, but we already saw it, 150 days and 40 days, and we have to... The water had already been going down. Why, asks the Radak, did he wait to open the window until now? And here Radak gives a beautiful answer, and we'll end with one of the things we started with, and that is the human, emotional, psychological dimension of Noach. Says the Radak, Yesh lefarish ki yadayin pachad Noach. Even at this stage, Noach was scared. I would say shell-shocked. I mean, or what we would call it now, PTSD. PTSD. This is the mocker. He was shell-shocked. He was in post-traumatic stress disorder. Even though it had stopped raining, even though the waters were going down, he was scared. The waves of the water were still chopping. They were so high, the waves, they were coming in through the window. Derech HaChalon. He would not open it anymore until it was resting on the mountain. And then after that, 40 days he waited, 40 days more. It stopped, the water had come down. For light. And then also, to send away the raven. So, to me, again, this is the human dimension, which always fascinates me. You imagine simplistically before we started this whole study, he gets into the ark. You know, it's good. You know, put on the music, let's learn a little bit. You know, what's the score in the game? You know, like it's all nice. We don't ever think about this. We never think about this. But the Radak, I think, says something that's very compelling and very intuitive. It was traumatic. He was scared. There was no guarantee that this was going to go all right. You know, it's not like this ever happened before. He had no reference point here.
He was very practical.
He was human. I would say he was human. That's my point. He was human. And therefore, he was scared, even at the end. And that's why, as we're going to see, as you all know, and there's different reasons for it, but this clearly has to be one of the reasons, that's why the Torah tells us that Noach didn't go out of the ark until Hashem told him to. So there's different explanations why. And the classic explanation the kids learn in school from Rashi, as he was a tzaddik. Just like he didn't go into the ark till Hashem said, he'll leave the ark. But I would suggest, and I have to tell you, I don't know yet, but I'll bet either the Radak or somebody else is going to say he was too scared to leave. And I think that's very natural and very persuasive. Okay, we'll see. Welcome back. Tell your friends we still have a few more spots at the table. And in Mitzvah Hashem, we will see you next week.